There are some very fascinating things in this chapter which have nothing to do with words, but rather with experience. They have nothing to do with human thoughts, they were made possible for Joel because he was not living in this world. Now, for anyone who may still think that the life of Jesus was spent trying to teach us how to make this a better world, please remember that my kingdom is not of this world. He was lifting us out of this world. And if for some reason we in any way are still trying to make a better world, a happier world, a more comfortable world, a more successful world, watch out, because that's what you may get. You may be stuck with just that. That's the meat that perisheth. For each of us, the world must end. Either you end it for yourself or it ends for you. The way of human thought is the way of the world. But when you have transcended human thought, when you have ascended to that consciousness which is not in duality, which is not entertaining the belief in the presence of error, which has through your discipline become unconditioned, then the experiences that Joel relates become the normal, the everyday. They become the experience of living in my Father's kingdom as spiritual beings. And as we read this now, each of us will see the degree to which we can aspire, and perhaps the degree to which we may have shared similar experiences. But it must be firmly outlined in your consciousness that you are not seeking a better world. The better world in this work becomes the added thing. Your Father knoweth ye have need of these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and these things of a better world will be added unto you. Let us not settle for just the added things of a better world. The Father worketh hitherto, and I, relinquishing the competitive thought machine, the finitizer, the liar, I walk with God, meaning I step out of the belief of a personal self and dwell in the kingdom of God, the power of God, the invincibility of God, everywhere, receiving no one except the Christ in all. And through this, discipleship, Joel could quietly enter phrases such as these. When we're no longer limited by the five physical senses and have attained even a measure of spiritual sense, or Christ consciousness, we find ourselves unlimited in terms of here, there, now, or hereafter. In other words, you're no longer in a place, or you're not going to a place. You're not here, and you're not going there. You're not limiting yourself to this physical being which is either here or there. You are capturing the spiritual essence of your being, which is always everywhere, but not through human thought. Human thought cannot deliver this idea to you. It must be an experience above human thought. The omnipresence of my being. Now this was a normal experience for Joel. There is a going in and a coming out without any sense of time or space. All unfolding without degree. A realization without an object. Do you see that degrees are our own little mental computers? We say this is deep or deeper. That's the mind of man. Infinity has no degrees. And to experience the going in and coming out without degrees must be again above the realm of human thought. A realization without object. In other words, he was in a state of consciousness which was not seeking a personal desire to be fulfilled. And therefore his realization did not become a material thing. It was an idea in consciousness experienced. Who could take that experience away? Who could take that realization away? What mortal power could enter that spiritual consciousness and manipulate it? What could defile that which is living as the Spirit of God? Do you see where the dominion is? Above thought. Now, in this consciousness, finite sense disappears. The vision is without boundaries. This is an experience in which understanding has no boundaries. Can there be any way to describe it with words? Or with thoughts. And yet, this is that universe which Jesus came to teach us here. My kingdom is at hand. And this is the gospel, the good news, the good message, that this boundless vision is possible. And here is one Joel who took the word seriously. That he had come here to bear witness to the truth, and the truth must be the invisible kingdom of God on earth that he came to bear witness to, where vision is boundless. What would be the point of him having stayed in a comfortable human corporeal sense of life when he'd only have to come back and do it again? When the very purpose of existence is to bear witness to reality. Now, to be a witness is not an easy task. To be an unwavering witness was the lot of Jesus. Just think of the viciousness that assaulted him, the violence, the insults, the slander, the threats, the intimidation. And right within his own small group, the treachery. And yet, to this end came I unto the world, to bear witness unwaveringly in spite of every error, because those things that were the intimidations, the threats, the slander, the persecution, the treachery, this could never be. This was impossible. This was his rising above appearance into the boundless vision of spirit which sees only itself and sees no one to condemn. It sees no mortal being. And that is the kingdom of heaven on earth, that we can walk in as this one did and is doing. The boundless vision. Only the mind puts a boundary. So this is out of that mind. Now life is seen and understood as unfettered form, limitless beauty. And we must look at that unfettered form, because some of us may not know what that means. There is certainly another kind of form than this one. This form is fettered. Now, what kind of form do you think was the form of Moses and Elisha when they were seen at the time of the transfiguration of Jesus? What kind of form was that which became the transfigured Christ? That is unfettered form. A form that could even walk out of corporeality, still existent, unlimited by material laws, independent of material laws, unfettered by the conditions of human existence, and still existing in form. Now that form is obviously not made of matter. And that's why it is unfettered. And yet there it was, Moses and Elisha. There was Enoch stepping out of corporeal sense. Did Joel die? Or did we become unable to behold his higher incorporeal sense? Which enabled him to resurrect while in the flesh. Do you see then the limitations that human thought imposes upon us? How it keeps us captive within that thought and within the forms of that thought, because your physical body is a thought form. As you release thought, you release the thought form of a physical body. Until the subtle transmutation takes place in which your own unfettered form stands where the world sees its mistaken finite concept about you. Then we are said to be ascended, resurrected from the dead. We walk in a soul form. The soul forms around us now are not visible to the human consciousness. You don't see Moses, Elisha, Isaiah, Peter, Krishna, Lao Tzu, but be sure that Joel did. He says so. And it's important for us to see why it is possible. Death disappears. Once more we see those previously separated from us by the so-called impassable barrier. And if you don't read that carefully, you're going to think, oh, I'm going to see my grandmother again. Oh, my dear departed friends. He makes it quite clear in the next sentence. This communion is not the communication as understood in the teaching of spiritualism. In other words, this is not a Bishop Pike speaking to his departed son. And the reason is because he is telling us that this so-called communication with those who have passed on before us is only with those who have transcended the corporeal sense, not with those who have perished in a physical form without illuminated consciousness. They have not translated, and we do not come into contact with them at all. We only come into contact with those who have entered into the realization of life eternal. But wait a minute. This was written while the man stood here on this earth, not later. This was written while he taught among us and walked among us and ate with us. He had gone through these experiences. He had communed with those who had translated. Can you do that in human thought? Can you be taught by God in human thought? And so all that has preceded this moment is to bring to us forcibly the conviction that in human thought I am a slave. I am in bondage to the flesh, to that which must perish, to corruption, that all that passes through the universal belief of man has an access to me, that my human thought is nothing more than a channel, a dumping ground for the universal beliefs of the world. To even be in brilliant human thought still exposes me to non-reality, to non-truth, to that which has no existence. To step out of non-existence into being, I must learn the secret then of laying down my sense of life, which is nothing more than my own human thought. That's all my sense of life ever was, my human thought. Having done this, Joel could say, it is now the reality of immortality, seen, understood, a vision of life without beginning, without an ending, reality brought to light. And in this consciousness, there are no physical barriers of time and space. The vision encompasses the universe. It bridges time and eternity. It includes all beings. Now, very, very emphatically, he ends this chapter with a passage from Luke. It isn't here just to fill the space. It is the secret. It was the secret when it was given by the Master. And it is still the secret when the Master places it in this book. Unless we have ears for the secret and the conviction of the meaning of the secret, we will continue in our human thought, finally thinking we know the truth, and then ride out on our white horse to conquer and to be disappointed. We can never humanly know the truth. The truth must know itself in us. We can never know the truth through a human mind, and the purpose of telling us to take no thought is to awaken us to the fact that by taking thought, we have drawn a veil over the kingdom of God. We have manufactured a mortal being where none is. We have manufactured humanhood. And we have manufactured all of the experiences of that humanhood. But remove the veil. Take no thought, and what happens? My thoughts become your thoughts. And my thoughts are about reality, the kingdom of God on earth. Immortality is revealed. In my thought, do you see Moses and Elijah? In my thought, do the bones knit? In my thought, does death disappear? In my thought, does life appear? Always, no personal me means the presence of divinity revealed as self. When Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world," we must see that he meant that there is no world. It is a bubble of human thought. There is no matter. It is a bubble of human thought. There is no human activity. It is a bubble. It has its bubbly beginning and its bubbly ending. But if you will take no thought for your life, because your life is not the life you're taking thought about, you're taking human thought, and it is about a human life, and you're in the state of non-existence. He was giving us life, you see. He was saying, there it is. Take it. Accept it. Be it, live it. All you're separated from is what you've been seeking, and it's right where you are, but it cannot come through that density of human thought. And yet, here's this human thought pulsing through you, and you can't stop that mind because your motivation isn't high enough. Your conviction isn't strong enough. There's always the mind itself saying, maybe he didn't quite mean it that way. Maybe I can think this through. Maybe I can understand it. You cannot. You cannot think it through or understand it. There is no truth to know in the world. There is only truth to know in the kingdom. There is no human mind to think with. That's pretty rough on psychiatrists. But there is no human mind to think with. If the human mind were capable of making this a perfect world, it would have done so. But the Christ mind is a perfect psychiatrist. The Christ mind not only speaks the truth, but as it speaks the truth, it demonstrates the truth. It manifests the truth, so that the idea of the truth becomes its own manifestation. That's a super psychiatrist. That's one who not only tells you you can be well, but shows you you are well. The Christ mind is the expression of man's perfection in all things. And the Christ mind is the only thinker. And the Christ mind is the only mind you have. But you have it. So the passage in Luke, which is the same as the one in Matthew, take no thought for your life what you shall eat. Has been misunderstood by so many, even metaphysicians, and even Bible translators. And yet, the more we study the meaning of the word thought and truth, the more is revealed to us that truth is the name of our own being. You might just as well go around declaring that my name is Jerry, my name is Jerry, my name is Jerry, or I'm seeking Jerry, I'm seeking Jerry. What you are requires no human thought. And the very attempt to think about what you are is amnesia. It's like the man who disappears from one town, leaving a wife and a family, and they find him 5 or 10 years later in another town. He's got another wife and another family, another name, another job, and he really doesn't remember that he's the fellow who lived in the other town. He has amnesia. The moment we entered into human thought, we had amnesia. This spiritual amnesia took us away from reality. But nothing in the world could convince us that we had amnesia. Nothing could convince the man with amnesia that he had another wife and family somewhere, and that he'd once been a radio broadcaster. Why, he doesn't even know how to speak that way. He's a foreman in a watch factory. But it happens. And it's happened to the human race. Now suppose we were to turn this world over to children whose age were 4 years old and say, now children, we want you to run this world. You're 4 years old. We're giving it all to you. It wouldn't be long before we'd have a world built of toys and things that four-year-olds do. We wouldn't give this world to four-year-olds to do that. And yet, our thoughts, compared to God's, our thoughts must be even less than a four-year-old. But we have taken the world and we have run it with our thought, even though we are less in relationship to God than a four-year-old is to us. We have taken it out of the truth into our thoughts. And our thoughts have run the world. And along comes one who stands before the degradation of Rome and says, I have come to bear witness to truth. And the truth is this, that unless mankind takes no thought, he's going to remain in bondage, even when he thinks he's free. Because his thought is always going to be about the world that doesn't exist, and his presence in a world that doesn't exist. And so I say, if you don't have the motivation or the conviction of that, or the spiritual understanding of that, you'll continue to take thought, and you'll think you're making great progress. You'll think your understanding is increasing. And you will be living in the world boundary, which has nothing to do with the true, unfettered forms, the real, unobstructed beauty that is everywhere around us. If for a moment we could look at this passage literally, to just drink in every word as it means exactly what it says, knowing that behind that literal meaning is this vast infinity of spiritual understanding. He said unto his disciples, therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life what ye shall eat, neither for the body what ye shall put on. You see now, he's telling us that our body isn't our body. The clothes we wear isn't the actuality of our daily life. The food we put into our body isn't what we really need. He is telling us that we are not matter and have no material need, but we insist we do. Just as Joel insisted the baggage would turn up. Even the food we eat, which we suffer to do so now, must be seen as an invisible spiritual activity which we, through finite sense, are interpreting as food for the physical form. Always you must see the spiritual truth behind. This is trying to awaken us to that spiritual truth behind. The life is more than meat. The body is more than raiment. Down here it says, and which of you with taking thought can add to his stature one cubit? You know, that has changed in recent scholarship. The word stature has really changed. It used to mean the height of a person. You can't make yourself 5'9" if you're only 5'2". Scholarship has turned out that possible, miscorrect, uncorrect translation of that word, which is stature here, and says that it meant length, but not length of form, but length of life. And stature should have been who through thought could increase the length of his lifespan. Now, I won't say this is authoritative or definitive, but at least it's something to think about. And they trace it to the original word used, which at the moment I forget, which had a connotation not in time, or rather, not in space, but in time, so that it would be length of life rather than size of stature. Again, I won't be quoted as saying that's definitive, but I am accepting it. If ye then be not able to do that thing which is least, why take ye thought for the rest? If you cannot increase your lifespan, or even if you use it the other way, your height, with your thought, what good is your thought about anything? Why not face the fact that thought is without power as long as it's human? Its power is only in a material, non-existent universe. And of course, this takes science of mind and makes it a direct contradiction of the master's teaching. Because here, we're told to take no thought repeatedly, and the whole idea of science of mind is positive thought. This doesn't say positive thought. It says take no thought. You've got to get first to the positive and then above the positive into divine thought. Now, divine thought is very positive. But it isn't human positive thought. And that's the difference. There's no power in human thought. There's only seeming power. The real healing consciousness is in the divine thought externalizing as the perfection of being. And so the lilies are mentioned to show you how a perfect idea appears, which is not a man idea. And it could have been any flower, of course. And the birds are not man ideas. But you too must remember that the lily and the bird is still our finite concept about the spiritual idea that is there, which we are misinterpreting into form. We're still moving toward that invisible universe around us. The final lines are, seek ye not, but rather seek ye the kingdom of God. Seek ye not what ye shall eat, but seek ye the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. It is your Father's good pleasure, and that divine consciousness is the Father, to give you the kingdom. Do you see then, if you are not relaxed in the state of no human thought, knowing that divine consciousness is all there is, you are creating that false identity called man, which walks the earth looking for his God. Taking thought, sending up prayer, moaning the fact that he has not, seeking to improve his life. But if I already am the living spirit of God, can I not stand in the face of this pulsing mortal mind that wishes to push itself through me? And take no thought that it wishes me to have. Must I forever be a victim of this impersonal force that makes me think against my own will, makes me see error, makes me experience error? Or can I not, by recognizing and abiding in the truth of my being, finally stand unwavering and defenseless against that which has absolutely no power, because it is the very opposite, the imitation of that which is? That must be our permanent mountaintop, until we too are brought into the realm of the unfettered form. We accept our real existence before it can come into the experience and manifestation which we have all been seeking. And we recognize the only antagonist has been this invisible force called mind, which wants to make us think, so that we may see the false pictures about an identity that never existed. Well, that's our alert for today. This leads us to soul. The soul that is too pure to behold that which is not. The soul that marries the Christ. And that's a happy wedding, and I hope you can attend. Thanks very much, and say hello before you go, will you?